I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. For over 65 years now, James Hibbard has worked as a professional dancer, singer, actor, director, writer, and teacher. He can add writer to his many personal and professional achievements as he's just published a new memoir, Can't Stop Dancing. He grew up in the Pacific Northwest and fell in love with the movies, especially the dancing. His parents notice his talent and skill and nurture it with lessons 2.5 hours away in Boise, Idaho. Soon, his mother takes him to Los Angeles for further study, and seeing Hollywood, as he writes about it in the book, provides for a charming view into a company town in the late 1950s, early 1960s. Soon he gets his start in movies, dancing in the film version of Gypsy, starring Rosalind Russell and Natalie Wood. That's followed by Bye Bye Birdie with Anne Margaret in a number of films with Elvis Presley, and Hello Dolly, directed by his childhood idol Gene Kelly. Throughout, there's television work as well as theater and nightclubs, but he moves permanently to Vancouver in the 1970s, and soon a whole new life as well as professional vistas open for Jim and his family. Jim, who joins me now, has worked with everybody, and it's very tempting to just throw out a name and get his reaction or experience with some famed show business personality. But the book is more than just name-dropping. You get a sense of the hard work artisans like Jim go through when working in the glamorous business of show, in Hollywood especially, at the height and the decline of the movie musical. We see in Canada how he rises with the increase in film and television production in Vancouver. In the book, we get that very Vancouver story of somebody who falls in love with the city the first time they arrive. That happened for Jim in the mid-1960s when he came to do a production of West Side Story, produced by Hugh Pickett and directed by Ada Broadbent. On that run, he met his wife, Charlene Brandolini, who herself has deep roots in Vancouver history. I spoke to Jim last week, who joined me from his home in the Okanagan. This new memoir is published by Bear Manor Media. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Jim Hibbard. Mr. Hibbard, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us. There are so many great stories in this book, and, you know, one could simply conduct the interview by just throwing out a name and then getting you to tell us about your experience with them. The one thing I was wondering is, you know, why didn't this book come out sooner? It just seemed like a given that with everything you've done professionally and personally, this just made for a great book.
Well, I never thought of writing the book with my colleagues and chums that I worked with a lot in Los Angeles were hounding me for many years to write my story. I was one of the dancers during all the, that time working a great deal. And so finally I decided that I was going to write it so my grandkids could have something to read about me. And but I started 7.5 years ago.
Mm.
Writing this, and it took me till now to get it ready for, you know, to go after, first of all, go after, and I was a dance colleague, friend of mine in L.A., her name is Rusty Frank, mm-hmm. She has a swing club, and she's a dance historian and a tap dancer. She suggested Bear Manor Media because a woman who gave me my very first job, mm-hmm. was a teacher. She gave me my very first job, and they also published her story.
As I said, there's so many wonderful stories. I just don't know where to begin. But I guess the best place to begin is in Oregon. Klamath Falls, that's where you were born. Do you still have family there?
Oh, no. The only relatives I had in Oregon were my grandmother and grandfather on my mom's side.
Uh-huh.
And my mother was ill for a couple of years, so my brother and I went to live with my granddad and grandmother until Mom was better, and then we moved to Idaho, Council, Idaho.
I see. And so Idaho, that's where, I guess...
That's where I mainly grew up, is
yeah.
In Idaho.
And so I guess were it up to your dad, you'd have grown up a logger just like him.
That's what he wanted me to do, for sure.
Yeah.
And my brother ended up being a logger and working in construction. But my mom loved movie musicals, so she would take my brother and I to Boise, Idaho, because we lived in a log. At this point, we lived in a logging camp, mm-hmm. just about 2.5 hours outside of Boise, Idaho. So she would take us down to see movie musicals at the Egyptian Theater in Boise, the only theater at that time. And after I saw my second movie musical, which was American in Paris with Gene Kelly, she said, after the movie, she said I tried to dance down the street like Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
And she thought I would like dance lessons, so she enrolled me in dance classes in Boise, Idaho. But we lived in a logging camp.
Yeah.
So in order for me to have my lessons, my mom would drive me to Boise, 2.5 hours into Boise, and I would have on Friday night, and then I would have my dance lessons Saturday and Sunday, and then go back to the logging camp for the rest of the week. And the only way I could practice is my dad and my grandfather on my dad's side pulled two logs into our trailer area and nailed some planks across it so I could practice my dancing under the trees out in the open. And that's how I was able to practice.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story, but and not just your mom, and we'll talk about your mom in a sec, but your grandfather and your dad do that. And as you write in the book, I guess your dad didn't really understand why you wanted to do this, right? Why you wanted to dance?
No, he didn't understand my passion for it. Just the way he was brought up, I guess, and he wanted me to have a real job, you know. Yeah. And I understood it, and he paid the bills, but he wasn't supportive other than that. But he did pay them my dance lessons, that's for sure.
And the other thing, you mentioned seeing a Gene Kelly musical, and I think it's just wild for people listening to us that not too long later, you end up a dancer in Hello, Dolly, which he directed. You know, one of the galloping waiters in the title number that everyone remembers.
Yeah, that's a great full circle because ending up in after all that time and working with him, and not only that, but I got the opportunity to tap dance on the set during a break with Gene Kelly and four other tap dancers that were in the company. It was a real treat.
Yeah. You mentioned your mother, Lois, who supported you. And again, another just incredible story where, she sees that you have this talent and nurtures it and champions you to do it. I mean, to drive 2.5 hours into Boise and then, for your dance lessons and then drive back. And then, take you to Hollywood, where she takes up a job waitressing just so that you could make more money, so that you could take more lessons. I mean, that's a wonderful story about your mom in the book.
Yeah, she was my first and everlasting angel for sure. And it was touch and go because I only had 1 month of lessons, and once we got to L.A. in West Hollywood, we realized that at the studio I wanted to take dancing lessons from was too much money. Uh-huh. And we walked down the street and I saw a placard, saying Gene Nelson was teaching tap and jazz. And so I saw Gene Nelson was one of my idols as well. So I said, Mom, let's go in here. And I went in and I auditioned, and I auditioned for the owner of the school, and he was a ballet master, and his name was Nico Charisse, who once was married to Sid Charisse. And he was a great mentor and teacher for me. And so he gave me a ballet scholarship right away since we didn't have much money. And all my mom would have to pay is his guest teachers, like Gene Nelson and any other teachers And but we still didn't have enough money, and we just went across the street. This is right on La Cienega Boulevard, the school was, mm-hmm. and we crossed Beverly Boulevard and went into the old XL drugstore. And my mother, there's a sign saying waitress needed. And my mother walked up and got the job, and her salary made it possible for me to have enough lessons during that month. So it was all quite magical, you know. It was like it was meant to happen. That's for sure.
Yeah, I love that story about how both of you are disappointed about the first school, and then. And then you see the sign for Gene Nelson's, and you're the one who says, let's go in there. And you know, it changes your life because you meet Charisse and you meet Gene Nelson, and as you write in the book so lovingly about what they meant to you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because these people, I mean, they're truly angels, because I call them all the people that I have been inspired by and helped me along the way are definitely angels. And the... we have to remember these people, because they say Nico Charisse actually just saved my life, because my dad, after the month, my dad wanted to take me home, and he said, if you're not a star, you're going to be a lawyer, mm-hmm. and that was it, in his mind, and we just went over to Nico's school to pay our bill, and Nico said, stepped in and said, he can live with me and my family, and I'll take care of him and teach him how to lay dance floors and whatever. So that started a routine of me spending 6 months in L.A. and then 6 months at home in Boise, Idaho, until I graduated from high school.
Yeah, it's a wonderful sketch of Hollywood, I mean, that you give us in these years of the 1950s. It's fascinating to see what a company town it is. But before we get to the career that you end up having, as I finished the book, I couldn't help but think that you're somebody that leads with your heart. Because when you write about Charisse or you write about Gene Nelson, you pay such loving tribute to them, and... like, for example, the Charisse part of the story, you talk about not keeping in touch with him all those years afterwards, and how you wear that, how you seem to feel that, you know, you're quite, you feel that, don't you?
I regret it to this day. Nico was... literally my savior in terms of my career in show business, and he was a genuine good man, and his wife Zita, mm-hmm. was the task master in terms of I had to take technical classes with her, which were brutal, but she brought out the best in me in terms of my technique in ballet and jazz. They moved to Las Vegas, and I did lose touch with them, and I was quite busy, and I was but I regret not staying in touch with them for sure, because then, of course, you know, Nico passed, and then Zita lived until about, you know, I think about,
oh,
maybe 15 years later.
Really? Yeah. That's the other thing that struck me as I was reading the book is you're a teacher yourself. You know, you end up teaching dance even at an early age. You know, filling in at classes there, mm-hmm. and then throughout your life. What do you think makes a good teacher, especially in the field of dance, where it can, you know, it can be quite demanding, not just physically but emotionally.
Well. There, you know, a lot of, I've taken a lot of classes from choreographers and dance directors who actually just give a class, and you don't really learn that much in the class. I mean, you dance, of course, and you learn what you would learn from your own impression of it. Mm-hmm. But then you would take a lesson from somebody who actually teaches you. what is the right way to do it, or brings out the best in you in terms of your own abilities. And I became a better dancer all these years after I started teaching, because then I restarted to really learn what I was teaching and what I was supposed to teach. And I do teach, and I love teaching, and I think the main reason for me, and a lot of the teachers even now, that I know, is the passion to give back to younger people who want to, you know, to become a better dancer or have a career in this business. The whole purpose is, and the pleasure is to give back and work to help these people ahead. All the choreographers I worked with, yeah, and dancers who became choreographers, they helped me further my career, you know. And so I really have a passion to continue doing that. So I love teaching. I really love it. I'm going to start a whole new series of classes here in Penticton, B.C., just in a few days.
Really? Wow. That's also a great lesson, I guess, in dancing, that one never stops going to classes or working out. There's a wonderful story in the book. You know, when you were on vacation, you and your wife, Charlene, in New York, you wanted to take a tap lesson. And it turns out the instructor doesn't show up, but Savion Glover fills in. And I thought that was a great story.
Just unbelievable. It was actually to take a class from one of his dancers that was in his show, Bringing the Noise, Bringing the Funk.
Yeah.
And his name was Omar. So I signed up for that class, and then we're all waiting for Omar to show up, and the office lady comes in and says, he is not feeling like teaching today. So I said, well, what we're supposed to do? And she said, well, you can jam or, you know, do whatever you want to do. And I planned on the class up the street at the other dance studio on Broadway, to take a class from one of the tap dogs, from Australia. And, I was just leaning over, starting to take my shoes off, and I see these feet walk by me, and there was one sock all the way down and one sock up, and it's Savion Glover. And he stopped at me and said, what's the level of this class? I said, intermediate. And he said, okay, let's go. And that was it. I started having a lesson from that genius. That was crazy.
Jim, was Gypsy your first film?
Yeah, that was the first film.
Yeah.
1962.
And you know, what a way to start in the film business. You know, Rosalind Russell, Natalie Wood, you know, one of the great Broadway musicals of all time, in the film version now. It's a fascinating story, because you start with that film, and then Bye Bye Birdie, and then all the other films, right, it seems, one after the other, not to mention television and stage work. In terms of film and dance, because you come into it, 1962, as you just said, the era of the great film musicals, you know, the MGM musicals of the 40s and into the 50s, that had passed. Did it seem, when you were in the business at the time, that musicals were on the way out, that it was dying in the film business?
No, not until actually prior to Hello Dolly.
Mm.
It was because it was going strong for all those years, and then it started to there started to be rumors, and Hello Dolly turned out to be one of the last big movie musicals of that type for a long time, you know, until like Chicago or Moulin Rouge came back in.
Yeah. Yeah, that ends up, I can't remember how many films you did with Elvis Presley.
I did six films.
Wow. Yeah, and you really developed a close friendship with him, didn't you?
I did, and it was, to me, I mean, Joseph, everything that's happened to me seemed to me to be meant to be. It was. I just went along from job to job and job to job. I kept working and I kept going forward, and it was crazy, and it was right for me. It was the right thing, you know, for me, you know, and I just kept doing.
Yeah.
You know.
You tell the story of Frank Sinatra, Marriage on the Rocks.
Yeah.
Which I actually have the DVD on my desk, and I still haven't watched it yet, but I plan to watch it shortly. You illustrate for a lot of us fans of Sinatra, what it was like, what he was like, because you taught him how to dance on that film, and at the same time, you know, you tell the story about the darker side of him, you know, involving the extra.
Yeah. That was a real shocker to us. I mean, he was so effusive with his praise.
Mm-hmm.
When I taught him to do those dances of the 60s while dancing with his daughter Nancy in mm-hmm. the go-go cage, to that next number that we shot on the back lot where he's in Mexico, and we're all, and I'm dancing behind, there's actually one dancer that unfortunately was kicked off the show, was to the right of me and right directly behind Mr. Sinatra, and it could have been his mood. I mean, but his work in that scene was so minimal. He only wanted to do one shot and get out.
Yeah,
and so. It was engineered by, of course, him when he was too frustrated. But then we all thought, we're next, you know.
Yeah.
So it ended up three dancers, you know, in that scene. And it was all the choreographer had to do was just maybe switch us around so that there'd be a dancer behind him not making mistakes, right?
Yeah.
But it was a shame. It was really a shame because he's widely known for being so generous and helpful and doesn't forget people, and but he's also known for being really a hothead too.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. You talk about coming to Vancouver for the first time. I guess it was a stage version of West Side Story, was it, that brought you here? Can you describe, Jim, just what it was like seeing Vancouver for the first time, and the Vancouver that you fell for?
Oh, geez, it was so beautiful, and the whole thing. We're coming in from the airport and driving over the Granville Bridge, which goes right into downtown Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the sawmills were still underneath the Granville Bridge, so that aroma from the sawmills, it was reminding me of home. And growing up in all these logging camps and sawmill, being around logs and sawmills all the time. So it was just a stunningly beautiful city. And the traffic wasn't, you know, crazy then.
Yeah.
and we say that they launched me at the Sylvia Hotel right on English Bay.
Mm.
And that's a fabulous hotel, old hotel, and it was glorious. It was wonderful.
And that was the production of West Side Story where you met your wife. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was a crazy. I tell you, it's like everything seemed to be falling into place in my life. Just someone else was taking care of me. You know,
yeah.
Actually everybody that I met and took the time to do things for me and further my career just happened my entire life. And all of us seasoned dancers that were brought from L.A. to do West Side Story, at that time you couldn't do a production of West Side Story unless you did the original Jerome Robbins choreography.
Mm.
So you had to get people who had worked with Jerome Robbins in the movie or the play in order to do that. And from L.A., we brought Gus Draconis, who was in the play and the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Susie Kay, who both was in the movie, and Bobby Thompson, one of our dancer friends, was in the play and the movie. So they're the ones that actually staged all the choreography for the production. Now, we're all waiting in the rehearsal room because we've already been working for about 6 days. And in walks Charlene, my wife, Charlene Brandolini, who was brought from back east to do the comic role of Rosalia and sing somewhere for the ballet. And she sat down. They said right away, the director of the show said, without letting her warm up vocally, she said, sing somewhere and do it now, you know, and being very dramatic about it. And so Charlene takes off her coat and hat, and our conductor was Lawrence Foster, who was became the conductor of the L.A. Philharmonic Orchestra, sat down and played for her. And she sang somewhere, and we're all standing there listening, and she finishes singing the song, and you couldn't hear a sound. Then one person clapped, and then another person clapped, and then pretty soon it just exploded because she was so good, and she was her voice so beautiful and clear, and she was then going to go across the floor and go into the dressing room. And I walked up to her, and I told her that she sings real good. And that was it. I knew that when she sang, I knew that was the girl I wanted to marry.
So you not only fell for Vancouver, you fell for Charlene, didn't you?
Yes, I certainly did. And 6 weeks later, I proposed to her.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy good.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story to talk about her, because her family, they go back in this town. You know, her uncle was Fonsi, the famous photographer on Granville Street. And your in-laws, your father-in-law, I guess he owned the number 5 Orange, right?
Well, before it became number 5 Orange.
I see.
It was called the Melbourne Hotel.
Mm.
And that's the hotel that he owned and ran for years and years and years. And he, at one point there, I even worked at the hotel when I first came to Vancouver as a waiter.
Yeah.
And sold the hotel to two young guys, and they wanted to change it into a more up-to-date hotel, right,
and
place. And they asked Dad, Charlene's dad, what was his favorite color and what was his favorite number. And he said Orange and 5.
Yeah.
So it became number 5 Orange Street.
Yeah.
And then it all changed.
Yeah. So now this takes us into the 1970s. You and your family relocate to Vancouver. You know, you get a lot of work through the Arts Club, Tuts, Theatre Under the Stars for people listening to us, the CBC, even CTV. There's variety television production there. Do you regret leaving behind your career in Hollywood?
Vancouver offered, the weather here and the schools, the air was cleaner, the schools were better,
mm-hmm.
and there were very few guns on the street, and it was just, seemed to me a perfect fit, because I fully expected to go back down to L.A. and work, because it was the same time zone.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to get on a plane and go back down and work. And I thought everything would, because I was working constantly in L.A. And the last thing I did was the world premiere of Tommy at the Aquarius Theater. And then I came up to get Charlene and the kids. They were on a holiday, and I was fully prepared to go back down.
Yeah.
And then we just decided it would be a good fit. And good for a place to raise our children, and but I never worked another day in Los Angeles or Hollywood from that point on, and there was no work in Vancouver at that time. until I met Bill Millard at the Arts Club Theater, and then that started a whole whack of work in theater. And then I was back when there was no work. I went and worked at Number 5 uh-huh. at the hotel we had, and as a family, we bought Number 5 back after those guys. We developed the hotel and helped them develop it, and then we bought the hotel back. So Charlene was working there. I was working there, my two brothers-in-law, mm-hmm. And two of my dancers there were going to dance on the Wolfman Jack TV series, one of the first productions to come from L.A.,
yeah,
right, into Canada. And they told the choreographer turned out to be a good friend of mine, Andre Taillier from L.A., who's also in the movie West Side Story as well. But as soon as he heard from those girls that I was here in town, he called me and said, I need you to be my assistant and dance on the show. So that started my whole whack of television work at CBC.
Yeah. Yeah. You also did the Renee Simard show on CTV. And yes. As I mentioned, you know, a lot of work with Theater Under the Stars and the Arts Club. There are a couple of times in the book. I remember one story where you see Anne Margaret after 40 years, and you see Joe Esposito, you know, one of Elvis's confidants, after I would say about 40 years as well, and they ask you, where the fuck have you been? It's funny, but at the same time, you know, one wonders, you know, what sort of career you might have had you not just stayed in Los Angeles, but, you know, because you could have easily commuted back and forth for certain jobs, right?
I could have easily, for sure. I honestly felt that if I had stayed in Los Angeles, I would eventually choreograph and work and do all of those things that I wanted to do, like maybe choreograph the Academy Awards or whatever it might be. I knew if I stayed, I would get those things, but I didn't. So then the thing was, it was sudden. You know, my decision to leave L.A. was sudden. And so, I just went back down to L.A., and we sold our place, and I packed everything up and drove here. And it was losing touch with my friends in L.A. at that point. It was my fault entirely. But it certainly, you know, it just turned out beautiful here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And now I'm very, very happy that I'm living here. I still have my U.S. status, my citizenship, and I'm totally dismayed with what's going on down there. So
Yeah. I think a lot of people are. You've been...
Well, I wanted to mention you. You asked me about my... friendship with Elvis Presley,
mm-hmm.
and it's a time when a friend of mine in Vancouver, who was a famous radio disc jockey, Red Robinson,
right,
was going to have one of the casino theaters named after him, and he invited us to the party, and the people that he had there in the show that for his opening of the theater. Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers, and also the opening band was Paul Revere and the Raiders, who was the house band for the TV series I choreographed for Dick Clark in L.A. called Where the Action Is. So, I talked several times with Bill Medley, and because they were guests on mm-hmm. Where the Action Is all the time. So, we at the party, Red Robinson said, "Okay, you got to come over and talk to this guy, you know." And I'm sure you remember Joe Esposito, and say, "Oh, of course I do. See, this is road. That was his road manager." And we walked up, and Joe turned around, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "You know, Jimmy Hibbert, what the fuck I can do?" And then we talked, and then we had a wonderful conversation. And he said, "Your friendship with Elvis was absolutely rare."
Yeah.
He said he never did that with anybody on any of the jobs, but Elvis overheard me talking about growing up in the woods and hunting and fishing in Idaho, and he wanted to talk about things when they were simpler for him, mm-hmm. you know. And we talked about him growing up, but that went on for about 3 movies, and it was, and he was the kindest, most polite, respectful superstar I think I've ever met. And he was every time we'd have our conversations at his trailer, mm-hmm. And then the assistant director would come and say, "Mr. Presley, we're ready for the next shot." And he would always say, turn to me and say, "Jimmy, have we finished our conversation yet?"
Yeah, yeah.
And both Joe Esposito and Elvis invited me then to come. The next job was his comeback special.
Mm.
And I was there in his comeback special as their guest. And he came to me afterwards and said, I'm not making these movies anymore. So he said, I'm going to miss our conversation, our chats. And he was just a genuine, polite, respectful man. He was great.
Yeah, those are lovely stories about just these conversations you have with him. You know, this is at the height of his fame. You know, he has to stay in the trailer. He can't go out because he'd get mobbed by fans. And so everything was brought to him. And you're sitting there just talking about real life, really, with him, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very calm, very relaxed.
Yeah.
We laughed a lot. And he told me about a story about, because all of his he had on in his entourage, and a friend named Red West, who acted in a lot of his films, they all started learning karate many years before, just after his first hit record.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that he was driving his car that he just bought from proceeds, and 3 guys ran up to him at a red light and said, "Are you Elvis Presley?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I am." And one of them, right in the face, ran away. And from that moment on, he and his guys, he took all his people to learn karate with him.
Yeah.
And then he used to put on demonstrations on the set. It was great. Very, very fun.
Yeah.
Well, what is it like for you, Jim, when you see, I'm sure you watch TCM like the rest of us. When you see a film that you were in, and I mean, do you stop and watch it? I mean, Gypsy was on too long ago, and I'm sure, you know, I remember your face in Gypsy. I mean, do you stop and watch the thing?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I like to, I've always loved the business, and I always loved being there, and I always wanted to be, and one of my favorite places is right on stage. And it's so when I see myself much younger, it's fun for me to watch, you know. And again, it's just a great memory.
Yeah.
And you know, and you watch a film like that, you're right back doing it again in your mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great pleasure.
And you still dance. I mean, that's very important to a dancer, is to never stop, isn't it? I mean, that's the title of the book, isn't it?
Well, that a lot of my dance friends that I've worked with in L.A. and even up here, mm-hmm. they're not dancing anymore. There's they either lose their spirit, or they have knee replacements or hip replacements or things like that. But that, I've been blessed with continued to work, and any dancer who dances and loves to dance, it's like breathing. I mean, you can't breathe until you're dancing. You can't live until you're dancing. So it's when I'm dancing, I'm the happiest person. So I it makes me feel good, and I love it, and it's and I can still do it because I mean, all those recent TV shows that I did in Vancouver, mm-hmm. for Kenny Ortega and Paul Becker, I'm dancing with babies, literal babies, you know,
yeah.
And it's a real compliment to be able to do that.
Well, long may it continue. I hope you get to do what you want to do for a long time to come, Jim. I could talk to you all day. This is such a wonderful book, and as I said off the top, there are marvelous stories in it. Congratulations on writing it, and continued good luck with it. I so appreciate your time today.
Oh, Joseph, thank you for this interview. I really appreciate it, and all the rest to you as well. Whatever you do, you know, you got to get it out there and thump and bump, you know, because is the alternatives all sick. So just get up and get out and do it, you know.
The book is called Can't Stop Dancing. It's published by Bear Manor Media. Its author, James Hibbard, joined me on the line from Penticton in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.